Welcome to Season 5 of Kin Folklore, where we have gone through a portal and returned to the world of His Dark Materials for Season 2 of the BBC HBO series based on the novels written by Philip Pullman. Last week, we discussed the shaky alliances the characters began to build, talked about some of the things we learned about the witches, and introduced the city of Chittagatse, where children roam free and the specters haunt the city.
In this episode, we will be covering all of the demon-changing, world-exploring action of Season 2, Episode 2, entitled The Key. We'll recap the episode, talk a bit about our observations, and discuss some of the themes, and look through the Ember Spyglass for some background.
The skies are darkening. Light is dull. And I'm trying to reach for the adult content. But it feels indistinct, like it's behind a veil. But don't worry. It would be most irregular if Kin Folklore did not have adult content. Nothing to thank us for, because it's part of the curse and the web of design by which you are both the spider and the fly. But you know what? We'll put our hand over the flame and we will atone for it.
Ah. I want to talk about that scene later, for sure. I have thoughts.
Oh, McPhail.
So our episode begins with Lyra trying on new outfits to take to Will's world as the two prepare to cross over from Chittagatse back into Will's world. Will, he has to tame some of her fashion choices. No capes, Lyra!
Fashion police! No capes, no hats, nothing. It's all out of season.
He's very clear, though, that the point is to blend in.
Yeah.
Which is something that Lyra clearly doesn't understand, because as soon as they cross over, she hits a car.
Okay, this is...
It shouldn't be funny that a child is struck by a vehicle, but this scene was deeply funny to me.
Listen, why did she run out? She ran out like fully confident, like she knew where she was going. And he's like, yo, wait, oh, wait, hit that car. And the person just kept driving, like hit her with the beep and was out, like beep, beep.
Listen, it's a city. Like, that's how the city is. So despite Will's warning to blend in, Lyra is way too excited by the prospect of returning to Jordan College, where she grew up, even though this is a different Jordan College. And she's very disappointed to find that Will's Oxford doesn't even have a Jordan College.
What a great flashback to Roger and Lyra running through Jordan College to open the whole series, when you see her running through Oxford and she's passing by people preparing like meals and tables, and she's trying to get to where she's going, only to like see the stark difference in Will's world. It's really cool.
Yeah, this was, at first I was a little frustrated with her, and then upon my rewatch I was like, oh, that's right, she feels like she's going home. This should feel like a homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. So she's so excited because she's just looking forward to seeing Jordan again, which she hasn't seen since episode 2 of season 1.
Yeah.
And instead, what she's met with is basically an entirely different Oxford.
Yep.
So sorry for Lyra. That's tough.
It is.
So Will tends to her wound and also sets up his cell phone. We have to talk about the cell phone. Okay, so first I want to give a shout out to the several fans who raised that in the first episode, Will's cell phone is still working in Chittagatse for no reason that we can understand.
No, how long? He said he'd been there for like a few days. Like, and how is your phone still on 20%? What kind of battery does this guy have?
Yeah, like our friend Anders made the very point that it was like, this is the biggest scandal of this episode. Like, why is his cell phone still working? Okay, so then he clearly remedies that in this episode, because his cell phone has run out of juice with what is this, Paul? Explain this to me.
This is a Mophie. What he tries to pull off is a fucking Mophie. He's like, the writers of this thing must not know how this works, because the Mophie works when it's a charging case, like a self-charging case or a self-charging battery, either one of those. But any of those, you have to plug into power to charge it first. This guy takes it out the box and has instant juice. This makes no sense.
No sense whatsoever. And he does try to explain the cell phone to Lyra the same way that we kind of tried to explain it on our podcast last season when we were explaining the alethiometer. He's like, you know, you can call people and it tells you the news. And she's like, oh, I have something like that.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. She was asking a lot of questions about who's hitting you up? What's going on? Where are you at? I'm like, wait, Lyra, slow your roll, man. Shoot. He's like, listen, she was pressing. We're going to talk about the similarities between her and her mama around question people's whereabouts. Okay.
So she starts to tell him about the alethiometer and tells him what it told her about him, that he's a murderer, which obviously Will is quite upset about.
But the good kind. It's okay. You're the good kind.
he's like, don't say that so loud. Oh, man. So once his phone is restored, he sees that his mother has been blowing up his phone. She's been texting him nonstop. Like mm-hmm. any mother would. Mm-hmm. So he tells Lyra that he has to go and check on her and he will meet Lyra later. Lyra occupies herself by going to an exhibit about the North where she takes the alethiometer out and then, like, you know, she talks to it. She asks it how she can find out about Dust. The alethiometer is basically like, can you please focus on Will? Like, don't worry about Dust. Make sure you don't lie to the scholar. My girl does not even fully put this thing away before she walks right into Boreal.
Yeah.
Who has been stalking them since they crossed over.
Yeah. Yeah, this fucking guy is chilling in the cut. Like, he was giving me real Stranger Danger vibes. You know what I mean? Like,
he's watching them as they cross over. Like, yeah,
he walks up on a kid in a museum and he's like, so... You into skulls? Like, dude, what is wrong with you? This is weird. Like, you know, like, and he's like very creepy. The creepiness. And Lyra was totally like creeped out too. And she tries to act like she's like, you know, oh yeah, And then, of course, in Lyra fashion, gives away that she knows more than she should give away.
Yeah.
It's, oh God.
Lyra. I mean, I still can't get over the fact that she had the alethiometer out in full view.
It's crazy.
It's insane.
It's insane. It's crazy.
So, Boreal gives her a card. She lies to him, gives the name that she always gives everyone when she's trying to pretend she's not herself, which is Lizzie. And she heads off to St. Peter's College, which is where the alethiometer told her she would find a scholar who knows about Dust. The alethiometer also told her not to lie to that scholar.
Of which Pan finds it very difficult to believe that they're going to be able to pull that off. He's like, how are you going to do that? You always lie. I mean,
Pan's not wrong.
No.
This was a wild meeting of her and the scholar. So Lyra meets Dr. Mary Malone at St. Peter's College, who has been investigating dark matter. And it's a really crazy conversation because... right away, Lyra's like, do you know about Dust? It's called Dust in my world. And she's like, you mean in your school? Like, what is going on here? At one point, she's just very sweetly like, should I call your parents?
Yeah.
Like, are you okay? But she uses the alethiometer to essentially tell Mary Malone's trust by telling her something that she knew that no one else would know, which was that Dr. Malone, before she was a scientist, was a nun.
Mm.
Lyra gets some information about her about dark matter, which is the Dr. Malone describes as the matter in between all the known parts of the universe. And she tells her that she uses a computer called the Cave to look for it. We will talk more about this later. Lyra connects to the computer and it tells her through images, very similar to the alethiometer, that Mary Malone is important and that she needs to make the connections on her own. Mm. And that she will also need that Chinese box that's in her office. And then Lyra's like, you know what? I'm late to meet Will. I gotta go.
She sees the hourglass. She's like, time. Oh, I gotta go. I gotta bounce. Bye. It's hilarious.
So Will is there waiting for Lyra. He's pissed off because Will has had an incredibly chaotic day.
Mm-hmm.
So he did check on his mom and he sent her a text message to let him know that he was okay, even though he didn't actually speak to her. He just looked through his coach's window to see that his mom was all right.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went to visit the lawyer who oversees his father's trust fund and found out that he has secret living grandparents.
Wow. That was wild. That was what a thing to find out. And he was visibly shaking up. Like, what? I have grandparents that live in Oxford that he had never met. I felt for Will in that moment, for sure.
Yeah, I did too. This was this whole thing with the grandparents was deeply disturbing. So he goes to see his grandparents because they're, I guess, the co-executors of the trust. Mm-hmm. And his grandparents, you know, have been out of touch with him for all this time. And as soon as he asked about the trust, his grandfather, who has apparently been working with Boreal's minions, snitches on him.
Man, this dude was whack. I knew he was here only for the money. Doesn't gets up, hits the phone right away. And I was like, see, you know what? Even in Oxford, a black boy with a hoodie doesn't stand a chance. That's all I'm saying.
He didn't even give him a second to explain what was going on.
But Will was super smart, right? Like to tip over the teacup in that moment to like act like he did it by accident. Because that was obviously, to me, that wasn't accidental that he'd spilled. But to just,
you know,
and then just bounces. I thought that was really, really wise.
He's very street smart. Like he knows when danger is around and he's able to react right away.
Yeah.
So after Will sort of like blows up at Lyra, then they go just sit down and talk. Lyra basically tells him everything about the alethiometer. She was trying to explain it to him before, but she didn't really have a chance because he ran off. And I just want to note for the book readers, these two are sitting in the Botanic Garden on a bench. Mm. Very nice foreshadowing by the show. And I'll just leave it at that.
Really good. And then so let's go to one of our favorite places, the Magisterium. And we're at Cardinal Sturrock's funeral, newly appointed acting cardinal, Cardinal McPhail.
Make sure the emphasis is on acting.
Acting cardinal. As your acting cardinal. Anyway, this guy tells the conclave that he will avenge the death of Father Sturrock by the witches, right? He says a bunch of things. He just goes into
blah,
it.
Blah, 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 blah.
The authority has blessed me with the clarity of purpose to bloviate and read the room. Not at all. This guy is like he's like loudly over explaining what he's gonna do and nobody's here for it. Later at the gathering, it turns into a trial. Boreal shows up late, sits next to Mrs. Coulter, and tells her that Adriel's servant Thorold has been held downstairs below, which Mrs. Coulter, you know, is a little surprised about. And they don't have a warm reunion, Andrea. Not at all. Like,
no. It started out warm.
Yeah.
She was like happy to see him, right? And it got real icy real quick.
My guy strolled in very late though. She was probably pissed about having to be there with all these stiff dudes for so long. Like nobody has a good time like Boreal. The two immediately clash. He won't tell her what he's been up to, and she won't tell him about Lyra. They're having a little lover's quarrel, you know, like it's like, you know, where you been? I've been away on business. Why are you messing with me, girl? Like asking me all these questions. She's like, okay.
How about you tell me where your daughter's at?
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, they are not very, it's not as warm as it once was when they were snuggling over the thought of little spy drones going to take out people. Oh man. Dr. Lancelius shows up to this trial. You remember Dr. Lancelius from the Witches' Council in Trellison? Yeah, same Dr. Lancelius. Comes in, snake slithering, and he's brought before the audience where Serafina basically has sent him as a diplomatic emissary. She wants him to speak and try to see if they can bring about peace after they done took out the top cardinal in the magisterium. After being questioned by Father Graves, who is... God, this guy is extra. Like, if you talk about extra, like, this guy's fucking extra.
But he's a trial attorney here, right? You know, he's trying to make his point.
And he remixes heresy, and now all of a sudden it's blasphemy! Blasphemy! You hear him? I was like, damn, bro. Like, calm down. Anyway, Lancelius is then sentenced to 8 years of hard labor. That's rough, man.
Yeah. I was actually very surprised by this sentence. This seemed way harsh, especially since he didn't do anything.
He did nothing, and he looks at the guards like, "Don't fucking touch me." He's like, they try to grab him. He's like, "Don't touch me." He turns around on his own account. Afterwards, Mrs. Coulter tells McPhail that he must strike against the witches to outdo Graves, and he signs an order to attack the witches and cleanse them. Ugh.
Yeah, this was all the stuff of the witches was gross. This was.
But everything in the Magisterium was gross. Like,
yes, the Magisterium really showed their ass in this.
I know, like, it was like gross, 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 like legitimately gross. They had like, we're going to get deeper into it, but we'll continue on and we'll talk more about different aspects of the Magisterium that neither one of us loved. In private, McPhail prays that and he's speaking to the authority, possibly his demon.
Or is he talking to his demon?
I mean,
I think that this is something worth exploring, only because he takes a knee and it seems like he's going to pray to the authority, mm-hmm. right? Which is a higher power outside of yourself. Mm-hmm. But his demon responds to what he's saying, which is a part of yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I think since this is a series that talks about the metaphysical, that this is worth thinking about. Was he talking to his demon or was he talking to the authority?
Very interesting. I mean, or when you've reached that position in his mind, are the two one and the same, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's something yeah. that he's getting. That's a very interesting take on it. I like it. But he goes in this conversation that, you know, it was a necessary sin.
Everything's a necessary sin, apparently.
Yeah.
Killing Cardinal Stark was a necessary sin. You know, slaughtering witches, necessary sin. This is all necessary sin. All sin is necessary.
All sin for him. As long as they're doing it, it's necessary. And he decides in that moment that he will pay his penance for the sin and burns himself on the fire. What a weirdo. What a weirdo. Who does that? Who, like, puts your hand over the flame and just sits there?
Fanatics and people who hate themselves.
So basically, Father McPhail. All right. Mrs. Coulter heads to the basement now with this new information, and she speaks to Thurl, who tells her that Lyra was with Asriel the day before he created the bridge to the other world and that she followed him up the mountain. Mrs. Coulter is shocked by this news. The Magisterian forces go ahead and strike the witches, destroying their homeland with a missile strike as Ruta Scotti and Serafina Pecola watch powerlessly nearby where they were arguing about the decisive action that Ruta took in episode 1. The action gets Father McPhail elected unanimously. Afterwards, rather than congratulating him, Mrs. Coulter tells him that this is in fact a curse, and she mocks him for falling for her plot. She tells him that she's leaving to find something infinitely more important than Asriel. Bye, Hugh. Bye.
Yeah. What a flex. She called him by his first name. I was like, I love. Because he also addressed her by her first name. When she came in, he said, Marissa. Yeah. And I was a little taken aback because nobody really calls her Marissa.
Yeah.
So what a flex.
Yeah.
I don't like Mrs. Coulter, but this was a great moment for her. Decent showing.
I go back and forth. You know how I feel about her. Some days I like her, some days I don't. I have empathy for her, but she's had some rough episodes here. She's had some rough ones.
Yeah, for sure.
Notable moments.
So what do you think of this episode?
First of all, let's shout out our boy Pan, who isn't very heavily highlighted in the outline. Basically, in the episode, he is hilarious. Super duper hilarious. I thought it's smelly in here like old ghosts. Oh, man, so good. And then, like, Will is, like, you know, checking on, you know, Lyra after she gets hit by or sideswiped. Not really hit. We're going to call it sideswiped by a car and has scraped up her knee. And they just keep moving on, and nobody checks on him.
Fine. Thanks for
asking.
Yeah,
exactly.
He was good in this episode.
Yeah, Pam was great. How about you? What were you into?
I mean, there were some really notable moments. So on the first watch, I thought, oh no, people are going to complain about how slow this episode is.
Yes.
Because there's not a lot of action, but actually quite a bit does happen. So we get this conversation between Will and Lyra about the alethiometer, which was needed to happen. Lyra has been, you know, not really fully trusting him yet. Mm-hmm. And then we just get a bunch of notable conversations that kind of set the stage for where the rest of the season might go. Like the conversation between Boreal, who, you know, I was happy to see.
Yeah, your boo is back. He's back.
I'm always happy to see Boreal. His conversation with Mrs. Coulter was very interesting because they were allies. I don't know if I would still consider that they are. They're both lying to each other in this conversation. And Boreal knows where Lyra is.
Yeah.
He just came from... That's where he was.
I mean,
he didn't want to tell
her. I think they're just like a couple that's in other people's DMs right now. They're not totally broke up with Aeon. But they definitely not being transparent about their actions, you know? So,
yeah. There was a lot that was super important to the book in the progression of this series in the book in this episode. So I happen to be a big fan of Dr. Malone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Dr. Malone stan. She is a great character. Her introduction was wonderful.
Yeah, it was.
Her and Lyra have great chemistry. And I believed that she was the right person for Lyra to speak to in that moment.
Yeah.
Which in the book, you're not really clear. So I thought that was, they introduced her as a very warm, understanding and smart, also innovative character. Mm-hmm. So I really liked her introduction. There were a lot of good nuggets here.
I mean, I really like with Dr. Malone, I just want to add to, just adding on what you're saying is the space like she had to be able to hear Lyra out. Like, think about this. This is a person that's a doctor, has a doctorate, has been a nun, has gone through many life experiences, and is a physicist, highly intelligent. And she still wasn't pretentious. She like listened and was empathetic to a kid that just stumbled into her office and answered those questions and was talking about she's from a different world. I was impressed by that part of her more than anything, was that she could actually say, okay, let me hear you out. I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm going to hear what you have to say. And that was pretty impressive.
100%. I think she was really, she had both the curiosity and the empathy that Lyra needed in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And Lyra's like not clear. I mean, she even says it like it's coming out all wrong. Mm-hmm. Like she basically said a bunch of nonsense to her and she listened. Most people don't listen to children
at all.
So I think that was really remarkable.
Definitely.
So we didn't talk much about the witches in the outline. When we talked about the summary of the episode, should we talk a little bit about this conversation between Ruta and Seraphina?
Yeah. I mean, Ruta basically is taking no shorts. She gives zero fucks about what she just did. She's
like, I did what I did. I said what I said.
We need her energy in this space. Like, we just do. We just need her. Like, you know, where is Ruta Scotti when you need to serve someone an eviction letter at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue? Like, that's what we need, all right? So she wants to unite the nine clans against the Magisterium while they're weakened. They just lost their top official. Let's strike. And Seraphina doesn't want to move against the Magisterium. As we know, she sent Dr. Lancelius to broker peace. But she's instead wanting to focus on Lyra and keep the focus on what they need to be focused on in the prophecy. And Seraphina says she tried to reach Lyra, but she can't sense her because she feels indistinct, like she's behind a veil. And, you know, the question is, will the arrest of Dr. Lancelius and the attack of the witch's homeland lead to an alliance between Seraphina and Ruta? Like, maybe there is something there that we're going to see change in Seraphina now that you've seen, you know, their home destroyed and an ally locked away.
Yeah, I think that I have two feelings about this conversation, because both of their point of views are valid.
Sure.
Like, Ruta's point of view is that the Magisterium has been a problem for a minute and we need to actually do something about it. That's valid. Mm-hmm. Seraphina's is kind of like, don't get distracted. We need to focus on the girl because we know about the prophecy and we know how important she is. And there's nothing more important than Lyra in this moment. I empathize with both of them, but I think Ruta is right, because they won't be able to focus on Lyra if the Magisterium continues to escalate.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's the thing that I think is so key. I'm with you 100% that I feel like, you know, I wish there was like a third witch in this whole thing. Like, yo, how about both? How about neither one of you are wrong? How about we just do both? You know what I mean? Like, and I think they'll come to that collectively, because you gotta take care of the Magisterium so you can pursue making sure that the girl is protected for the prophecy, you know? I also like Will's conversation with his grandparents. I thought that, you know, it's clear that John Parry was a wealthy dude, or at least his parents are. And, you know, I thought that it was interesting to see the alliances that world has already started to form, right, on the opposite side, like Boreal and his cop friend already getting in contact with the grandparents and starting to, like, really lay the trap for what they're trying to accomplish. Because, like, you know, we know this from season one. Once Fra Pavel told Boreal about the boy being a, and he thinks that the boy will lead him to what he's looking for, which is the knife, right? Or in the tower, or the tower that has, yeah, the tower with the angels. So that's what he's here for. And he doesn't care about anything. And it's interesting to see that they've really started the process of tangling up Will, even though he hasn't been in his world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we also learned a little bit about the witches that we hadn't previously had, which I thought was all very interesting. And out of this dialogue, which came from from Dr. Lancelius's testimony, there's also a theory that has emerged about Mrs. Coulter. So Dr. Lancelius told the Magisterium that, you know, when the witches come of age, they're sent to a region of the north where their demons can't follow them. This allows for the demons to be able to travel a significant distance from the witches, and it leaves the soul intact, which is super important. Like, they understand the importance of leaving the soul intact, but they also practice demon separation. He is the son of a witch who, when he came of age, his mother sent him back to be with his father because she wanted to spare him the pain of this separation, which is clearly very painful. I have a couple questions about this, specifically just that at least in the text of the books, the witches can only be women. So I don't understand why Dr. Lancelius would have undergone this ritual, because he was never going to be a witch. But that's like a kind of a minor quibble here. But what I found really interesting about the scene in particular was just that the camera stays on Mrs. Coulter the entire time that Father Graves is railing against the witches, and that Dr. Lancelius is talking about the witches and their coming of age ritual and tradition. So there's been some buzz on the internet about whether or not Mrs. Coulter is a witch. What are your thoughts?
I found it interesting. I think that there's something going on. I don't know. And we talked a little bit about this offline. This is an interesting kind of like development, right? And I don't know where they plan on going with this. But what we do know so far is that during this scene, they're really focused as they're talking about the abandonment of the child and a child out of wedlock, and the ceremony to be able to separate from demon separation. And even there's even a moment after that scene where Mrs. Coulter says, you know, I wonder what kind of woman raised, Graves. And she was like really obviously took it as shots. Like, she was upset. Like, you could tell she was upset after, which is why she, you know, tries to get Father MacPhail to launch his attack on the witches so she can secure his spot, because Graves, he's a little bit of a loose cannon to her. But I think what we also know is that in season one, there was some evidence that, you know, Mrs. Coulter's demon could get far away from her, right? This is one of the things that were that kind of threw Lyra off about how her and her demon interacted, how far away the demon could get from her in the apartment. So I think there's something to keep an eye on. That's my thought.
Yeah. My theory is that there's so I don't think Mrs. Coulter is a witch, and I'm just going to give my reason for why. Her demon is a monkey, not a bird.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as we know, her demon can get far from her, but not as far as Kaisa can get from Serafina.
Yeah.
And so one of my thoughts is it possible that Mrs. Coulter is the daughter of a witch and never actually finished her coming of age ritual, which is why her demon can get far away from her without her suffering pain? Or... but the demon still settled as something other than a bird.
Yeah.
So that would be my kind of like standing theory on Mrs. Coulter, and the possibility that she's a witch. My guess is that this won't be answered on the show, that they're just heavily hinting at it. But we'll see.
We'll see. I mean, I think that one of the things that, you know, to close this out is I think one of the things that stands out to me is we really don't know yet how far she can get from her demon. It'd be interesting mm-hmm. to see how they do that, right? Like, how far can she get from the monkey, from the golden monkey, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll see. And, you know, at least the whole time she'll be with Boreal being evil adjacent. That's all I have to say about that one.
Okay, I'm gonna say that last season, we weren't really sure what Boreal was up to when I made my initial comments about him.
Yeah.
He's not evil adjacent anymore. Let's just go ahead and say Boreal is.
He's evil. He's fucking evil. I'm glad.
He's out here stalking these kids, lying even to Mrs. Coulter. There's no reason for him to lie about Lyra's whereabouts to Mrs. Coulter if it's not for nefarious reasons.
Yeah.
This guy is stalking Will. It's, yeah, he's evil.
So you're saying he's evil, but not the good kind? He's not like the good kind of evil?
he's not a murderer, but the good kind.
Yes, okay. All right. Awesome. I love it. I love that we're making progress here. It's like, almost like your talk with Katara. It's like, awesome. It makes me happy. So let's take some time. And let's look through the Amber Spyglass and let's talk about some of the places that played a key role in this episode and our story. Okay, so we'll start with the Magisterium. We're going to take a closer look at the villains of this story. So what we learned in this episode is we learned a lot more about them than we had previously, right? In the books, the Magisterium is the headquarters of the Holy Church. It is located in Geneva. And in the show, the Magisterium is located in the same place that Buckingham Palace is, right? So it's located in London. The show also uses the term Magisterium to replace Holy Church. In the book lore, the Holy Church, based on the Roman Catholic Church, is structured with councils, courts, and orders. As far as we can tell so far, the Magisterium only exists in Lyra's world. However, Lyra's conversation with Mary Malone demonstrates that the church exists in Will's world, but isn't as strict or as powerful. When Lyra uses the alethiometer to talk to Dr. Mary Malone about her history as a nun who's lost her faith, she notes that in her world, Dr. Malone would not have been allowed to leave the church. The Magisterium also suppresses free will. So we learn in this episode that the Magisterium is deeply troubled as an organization. They hate the witches.
Trash. They're garbage. Yeah. That's what we learned. Yeah. I mean, we knew that, but like it went a step further in this episode. This is the most time I think we've ever spent with them.
Yeah, they like opened up a little bit more than what I wanted to see, right? I didn't really want to hear that much from them. They were a little bit much. I mean, my dude is over the top over there. What's his name? Graves. Yeah, Graves is over the top, right? So he leads off with lines like, They're soft and deceitful and seduce us to steal our seed.
Yeah.
Bruh, nobody wants your seed, bro. Nobody wants your seed, bro. You out here sounding like my boy Ben Shapiro listening to WAP, okay? You out here getting all hopped up and sweaty like hair dye running by on my boy Rudy G's forehead. Anyway, came through dripping, drip drop. Came through dripping, you know what I mean? He's got that crazy drip. So they are deeply hypocritical. They quote unquote necessary sin, whatever they do versus what everybody else does. They're violent. We've seen them strike in the north against Yurik and the Bears. But what they did against the witches was genocide. It's legitimately, they're extremely aggressive and they just wiped out the homes and a lot of the witches who lived there who didn't expect attack. It was an unnecessary use of force. And they're also deeply political, but deeply religious organization. They deeply fear difference and the unknown. The witches and the other world scare them because they are unable to explain their powers and the multiverse with their sacred text or the scriptures that they have. So they, if they can't explain it or control it, they feel as if it's a threat, and that threat makes them, you know, brings out the worst in them, to be quite honest.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to note how deeply misogynistic they are.
Super.
I mean, this is everything that they say badly about the witches has to do with the fact that the witches are women. Those are not things that they would say if they were men. We already knew how horrible they were. I mean, we called them fascists. Like, mm-hmm. We knew they were bad, but this look inside of them is even more disturbing.
Yeah, I mean, you look at just the response that Lyra has to seeing Dr. Malone and realizing, oh my God, you're a scholar, but you're a woman. Like, that's what the subtext of that is, right? Is that she can't believe that she's allowed to be a scholar in this world because of how much, like, you know, misogyny is in Lyra's world, how there is no, look how they treat Mrs. Coulter. So we know that this is a very, very problematic worldview in that world based on the controlling actions of the Magisterium across the entire world, which is wild that they have so much power.
Let's also talk a little bit about the cave, which gave the episode its title. And the cave is essentially a computer. It's a quantum computer. Dr. Malone described dark matter as the matter in between all the bits of the universe. She uses a quantum computer that she calls the cave to seek out these particles, which can't be seen in light. In the show, she tells us that she noticed when using the computer that man-made objects that she connected to the computer, you know, elicited a response from it. The particles moved and responded to it. And so then she tested herself and it also responded. Its response was even more powerful.
What a wild leap. I got this chess piece and I got the I Ching and all of that. And it's giving me some vibes. Let me just plug myself into this machine.
Yeah. I was sort of like, are you sure that it won't kill you? But okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So when Lyra uses it, the activity spikes immediately and she's able to see more than just a simple response. She's able to see essentially the same images that the alethiometer uses to communicate with her. And I just want to go through some of the images that she saw. Mm-hmm. So Screen Rant actually created a slideshow of each image and what the meanings were based on what they learned from Random House, which is a publisher that published these books. Mm. So the first image was the Alpha and Omega symbol interlaid over each other. These are supposed to represent the Magisterium and the Authority. Then she saw the Sun, which represents both the Authority and Truth. They had that she saw an owl. I've looked at this twice. I believe it's an angel. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that I'm right. I just think that it looks to me more like an angel than an owl.
Well, I will be the one to jump out here and be like, you're right. Okay. Like, that's it. Even if you don't want to say you're right, I'm just saying you're right just because I got your back all the time. Cause sorry.
I appreciate the backup. So if it were an owl, it would represent fear, winter, night. Being an angel, obviously, that's a celestial being. So I would, that just seems like there's no subtext there. Mm-hmm. If she saw an angel, it probably represented an actual angel.
Yeah.
It also showed her the image of the I Ching, a knife, which we can assume that this is based on the second book in the series called The Subtle Knife, and an hourglass, which is the one that sent her off to find Will because she realized that that means she's late.
It's the reminder app. That was the reminder app.
My guess is that the hourglass was letting her know that there's an urgency, that this is not mm-hmm. something that they can be... they can take their time with, that they need to move quickly. So to get more into like what the dark matter in the cave is looking for, it's looking for these particles or dust that are believed to be consciousness, which is why when Lyra reads the alethiometer or speaks to the cave, she has to clear her mind first. So if you're familiar with like mindfulness, meditation, Eastern philosophies, a lot of that believes that in order to connect with your conscious mind, you have to clear your mind and focus on your breath or on a single purpose. So that's sort of what they were talking about when she talks about clearing her mind. I did want to give a little background on I Ching because I've heard of it before, but this is, I was actually surprised when I had forgotten this was mentioned in the books, and I was surprised to see it pop up. So she mentions to Dr. Malone that she needs a Chinese object from her office. And Dr. Malone mentioned that she had connected the I Ching to the I Ching's box to the cave, and it elicited a response. So I Ching is an ancient Chinese divination text called the Book of Changes. It's one of the oldest Chinese classics. And it's basically the study of the change in human life. The belief is that understanding pattern and cycle of change will prepare a person for the future and help them make the right decisions. Like the alethiometer, the I Ching requires the reader to read symbols and interpret their meaning. The symbols are just different. So it is a real text that exists in our world. So it's not like this isn't something that Pullman made up.
No. And it's also just add a little piece of something I know from my own study is that it, because of the divination aspect of it, a lot of other schools of divination like derived from it. So there's a lot of other kind of like things that we've even talked about and covered a little bit in our Lovecraft Country pod that actually derive their origins from the divination aspects of this. So it's pretty interesting stuff. So, And what I would say, one thing I thought about is you were just talking about the angels and that being probably like, you know, the celestial being and the representative of it is, and why I'm kind of leaning towards what you're saying also, besides the fact that I'll fight anybody who disagrees with you, fight them. Let's go. Let me stop. I realized that like, that's part of the theme of this whole thing, right? There's angels, in Chittagatsi. There's like the what Fra Pavel said to Boreal about the tower of angels that are guarded by angels. So I kind of lean towards what you're saying there with that a little bit because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think she saw the angel, then the I Ching, then the knife. So I think that's trying to tell us something about what's going to happen in the rest of the story.
Yeah, it makes total sense to me that in that case, it would be like, okay, there's the angels, and you know, obviously that plays a part. The maybe some sort of level of divination and change, right? Some change that's happening, and then quite possibly that, you know, that has to do. I mean, the subtle knife is such a big part of the second book, so it has something to do with the way they encounter that. So book readers will know kind of a little bit of where this is going, but as you're just watching the show, we're gonna leave it there and just move to the themes of this episode, which were truth and deception. Much of Lyra's quest to this point has been about seeking truth. The truth of what happened to Roger and the Egyptian children, the truth about her parentage, and now she is seeking the truth about dust. This episode, each character is deceiving or being deceived, except for Lyra, who is told by the alethiometer not to lie to the scholar. Will is grappling with being deceived his entire life, not even knowing that his grandparents are still alive and live right up the street. kind of, right? Mm-hmm. So unclear about what has happened to his father, really, because now Lyra's letting him know that his father is alive. So deceptions lead to unstable foundations, essentially. And the alliance of Mrs. Coulter and Boreal is immediately frayed when they refuse to reveal the truth to each other about what they're doing. Boreal hides what he's been up to and withholds Lyra's location from her mother. Mrs. Coulter is doing her own deceiving too. She has no interest in sharing what she knows about the with the Magisterium, and uses deception to manipulate Father MacPhail into doing precisely what she wants.
Cardinal MacPhail.
This fucking guy. I'm putting him in the same category as Zhao, okay? This fucking guy, all right? That's it. That's all I got to say. MacPhail, he would say, you know what's so funny about you doing that is he would do that. He would like,
that's why I did it.
You forget yourself. You forget yourself. You don't know Marissa. This is his. Oh, man, this guy. So while the Magisterium and the witches war, Mrs. Coulter now will be free to do as she likes. So it's really interesting. And now you go to Lyra, right? Lyra, on the other hand, is the most truthful that we've ever seen Lyra, probably since it began, right? Since the show began. In season one, she struggled with the truth and regularly told tall tales. However, we see a new Lyra here. She listens to the alethiometer when it tells her not to lie to the scholar, and she tells Will the truth about what is said and what it can and what it can do. Her transparency has a positive impact in the right way. Both Mary and Will trust her a bit more and will surely be important allies for the rest of her journey. So I really like Lyra's growth with this, because it's showing that she's growing, but it's also... it's showing that internally, when Pan is questioning her ability to do it, that she's even questioning herself. Like, can I be as truthful as I'm going to be required to be? That little bit of self-doubt. And she rises to the occasion, which is really cool.
Yeah, and it's hard for her. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not easy for her to trust people. I mean, she says to Will, you can trust me. I won't betray you. I've had trouble with this before. Mm-hmm. And she tries to trust Will as well. And this gives me confidence that her and Will are going to have a good alliance, because she's trying to start on the right footing.
Yeah. She likes the kid and he likes her.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite clear that Lyra is very attached to Will mm-hmm. already. Mm-hmm. Whether or not Will is as attached to her, I don't think he is yet. I think it will take him some time to get there, because right now the only parts of her he's seen are... you know, like he said in last episode, she moves 100 miles a minute. Mm-hmm. She's just quick, decisive, scattered, you know, a little eccentric. Yeah. And so I think that Will is still trying to, like, get a sense of her. I also think that Will is much more mature than she is in this moment. But I'm excited to see these two together. I'm super psyched about seeing Mary Malone mm-hmm. and her... what she does next as well. I just think that the three of them together could have a very powerful alliance. And we're seeing all the other alliances kind of crumble. Like, yeah. Obviously, the alliance that Mrs. Coulter set up last episode with Cardinal MacPhail is already over. And also Mrs. Coulter's alliance with Boreal is at best questioned. Mm-hmm. Like, are these two really allies anymore? They're not being transparent with each other. Can you imagine how much more successful they would be if they actually just had a conversation the way that Will and Lyra did at the end of the episode?
Yeah.
Like, if their conversation was as transparent as Will and Lyra's conversation, they wouldn't struggle at all, because she would know where her daughter is. Yeah, right away.
100%.
She could go and get Lyra immediately. So I think that trust and truth and deception are all playing like very large roles in this world right now.
Yeah, it's the foundation. It's the thing, you know. The alethiometer has helped Lyra. It kind of makes you feel like the alethiometer is also rubbing off on her. She like she had a very, in one episode, right, she's kind of warming back up to it, because she had a visceral, like, I'm not talking to that thing anymore in the first episode. And and now she's like kind of, you know, realizing that the lithiometer wasn't the problem, it was all the stuff around it. And I think she's warming back up to it. But I also think Will is warming up to her, to allude to what you were talking about. I think like it really struck me that with the cops on his tail, with his everything he found out, his grandparents betraying him, that he waited for Lyra. He could have just, I'm going back to the portal, I'm shook right now, I'll, you know, she'll know that I'm back there and find me. But he went to the botanical gardens and he waited, you know, and I thought that that was really solid. So I think like you're right. I think they're going to have a really good alliance.
Yeah, I think in Lyra, just to note what you were saying about Lyra's relationship with the alethiometer, when she's talking about it to Will, she says essentially what you just said was like, it tells the truth no matter what, mm-hmm. good, bad, mm-hmm. otherwise. Like, it's just giving you the truth. And I think Lyra's becoming more comfortable with that, that sometimes the truth is going to be painful. Sometimes it's going to be something that makes you uncomfortable, but that you have to listen to it.
Yeah. Well, man, what a start to this season. I am super duper hyped to be back in this world. We have been enjoying it so far. Hope that you're enjoying the coverage. Please reach out to us. Kin Folklore Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Go to Kin Folklore on Facebook. And also just send us an email, kinfolklore@gmail.com, and leave us some reviews over in wherever you listen to podcasts. We appreciate you listening and enjoying it. And we look forward to continuing down this world and this story in weeks to come. So we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.